Recently, I've been reading some children's versions of the lives of saints, courtesy of my friend Helen. As she said, I'm reliving her childhood, reading all these little books. It's not easy to find good books, you know, that are entertaining for relaxing reading. And I saw in her office a book about King David from the Old Testament, and I just thought it would be nice to know about it, and I've discovered this is a nice way to get the really just the essential points in an entertaining read. So I've been learning about St. Rose of Lima and Martin de Porres and other folks that I can't even remember their names, but it's all been really fun. But I've also, of course, been introduced to a lot of Catholic dogma that I didn't know anything about, and I've been asking my dear friends to explain these things to me. Because a lot of these saints, part of how they express themselves, I just read about Teresa of Lisieux, and she was way, way into this one, where she does a lot of penance for the sake of souls who are trapped in purgatory. Now, on one hand, you can really understand. I mean, St. Teresa of Lisieux is just one. There's many who feel it necessary. The compensating concept they're talking about, and let me just say this, I'm trying to sort of find all these thoughts, but at several different times when the Virgin Mary has materialized in front of souls, often it's children, there's many beautiful stories from Medjugorje, from Fatima, from Garabandal, and probably the Mother of Guadalupe, but I'm not as familiar as that, where Mary comes back to souls who really have purity of heart and love her. But often the instruction is given that so many in the world have turned their backs on the divine that you need to be especially attentive and you need to make up for their inattention. And you have to make up for their, I started to use the word debauchery, but it doesn't even go that far. When the words that they would use is for their sinfulness by being extra pious. And you also have to do tapasya, however you would call that. You need to be extra disciplined and extra indifferent to the world of illusion in order to give power to the world of truth. Now, our path is not one of mortification. You know, it's not like the horrible Catholic traditions, at least we consider them horrible, where you took a little whip and actually abused yourself in the name of your holiness. In the Festival of Light, it says specifically, whereas in the past, suffering and sorrow was the coin of man's redemption, for us now that payment has been exchanged for joy. And then it goes on to say that the way we resolve all of our karmic issues, and a karmic issue is simply anything which persuades you that now I have to be unhappy and that now I have to separate myself from the joy of God. And that, if you think about it, that's all that it is. Whatever it is that you're trying to learn, the result of it always is that now I feel justified. My feelings have been hurt, the embarrassment is so deep, the physical trial is so tough. Now I have a right. Now I'm justified in saying, you know, there is no bliss. And our path, Master's way, is we, with calm acceptance and joy, that's how we face whatever comes. We just say right in the face of it, God's love is greater than this. There was the enormously touching exchange between the two Tenboom sisters who were Christians who were incarcerated in concentration camp in Holland, because in Amsterdam, when the Nazis took over, they helped a lot of Jews. They saved a lot of Jews and eventually were arrested. But they were put into horrible circumstances, and the older sister, Betsy, died, and Corey had a mission afterwards. And before Betsy died, she said to Corey, I'm going to die here, but you are not, and you have to go on and carry a message. And they were deeply devoted to Jesus, she said, and your message must be that no matter how deep the darkness, the love of God is deeper still. And then in the midst of this concentration camp, Betsy said to Corey, and they will believe you because you were here. That if you can go through this and still know that even this does not justify, you're losing connection, not merely faith, but actual connection with that continuous love of God. And of course, thousands and thousands, tens of thousands, probably millions if you count her book, believed Corey, because she had the power of having been through that and could still stand. Not every minute. Corey tells the story, probably making herself worse than she was, but she had some very, very bad moments. So it's not as if it's an unbroken cycle, but at the end of it, she could stand unshaken amidst all of that. Now, when we read, I read these little books about the Catholics, Catholic saints, some of them, not all of them, some of them. Essentially, they're seeking out that test, is how I would put it. You know, rather than just waiting and seeing what life brings them, they're seeking it out. They're always trying to find moments to challenge themselves. What if I don't drink water when I'm thirsty? What if I don't turn on the light when I want to read? What if I don't complain because I've been terribly mistreated? What if I continue to love this person who is treating me in a hateful manner? Can I? Can I still? Can I remember that the love of God is deeper than this? And from one perspective, when we look at it, from a certain perspective, when you look at it, you think, why would anyone do that? But from another perspective, why would you not? If this was your opportunity to really make yourself so powerful that nothing could ever touch you, why would you not do that? It's very interesting to contemplate, isn't it? And then they add to this, this other dimension, which is they make the sacrifice for the sake of others. Now, on a certain level, I'm really understanding it even as I tell it to you. I can understand what they're saying, because this is what they're saying. I don't care enough about myself to do this just for me, but I'll do it for you. Now, how many times in our lives have we seen that? That we find a strength that we didn't know we had because we had to. You know, the love of parents for their children is the most dramatic, self-sacrificing kind of love that exists on this in this world, which is why so many are so powerfully drawn to become parents. And it's not really because it's going to be as much fun as they think it is. Someone told me recently about a group of sociology students, college students, undergraduates, who did a project. Supposedly, this is how it was told to me. There were 20 students, and they followed new parents for 1 year and studied it. I don't know what else they learned, but 18 of the 20 students resolved never to have children. Because it wasn't what it appeared to be. It wasn't, oh, I get all that I want. It was that I get to give on a level that I never knew was there. Now, for some people, that's the making of them. And for others, it's not. We met two people who'd come out of a concentration camp many years ago when Richard Wurmbrand came to Grass Valley to speak. He's a great saint. I'm sure he's off the planet now because he was elderly 30 years ago. And he'd been through hell, as close to hell as you can make on this planet. And he was radiant, just as powerful as any human being could be, with God, not with anger. And he was on this, he spoke in this local church, and we all went to see him. And there was another man speaking with him who'd been through exactly the same thing, but the love of God for him was not deeper still. And he spoke, but he was broken. It's no shame to be broken. That's how we get whole. You know, circumstances break us, and it humbles us. We recognize our limitations. That's the only way I know of to deal with the suffering on this planet, is just to somewhere find the love of God that is deeper still, that says, this is not pointless, this is going somewhere. Reincarnation is essential. If you lose reincarnation, well, then you have this complicated purgatory, which is where I was starting. You know, I was sort of asking Gary and Helen, what is purgatory? Well, when there was no reincarnation, you suddenly are faced with this problem. See, once you step away from the whole of Sanatana Dharma, you're just left with these dangling pieces that just have to be knit together somehow. So if you don't mind my saying, Gary said very directly, well, when my uncle died, he sure didn't deserve to go to heaven. But really, hell would have been too much for him too. So there had to be some kind of interim zone where you just hang out until you somehow or another get to heaven. But of course, it's not pleasant to think of your uncle or your cousin or your sister or your child trapped in purgatory, so you want to help them. So you need to expiate the wrongs that they did. So you train yourself to be able to love God in all circumstances, and you dedicate that effort to those who need it. And in a very beautiful way, really, some of these saints, because they were dedicating their efforts to souls in purgatory. It wasn't people they knew. It was just people in purgatory that they really, really wanted to get out of purgatory because their hearts hurt. Because they were, if you're suffering, I'm suffering. Even if I don't know you. And that's where we live now. Now we have the internet and we have all this news and we get to know everybody who's suffering everywhere. And we get to know in vivid detail how much they're suffering. And it's not easy. And we don't have a comfortable, well, we do, in fact. But what do we do about it? Well, and one of the things that we're trying to do about it is we're trying to become instruments of peace. You know, this was Jyotish and Devi's inspiration for this year. Let us really try to be instruments of peace. And so we're using the affirmation, and it's not the affirmation per se. It's the commitment on our part to do something that will lift the vibration. Now, I read something recently that Swamiji said that was very interesting, because this whole picture of world cataclysm has been part of Ananda since the beginning of Ananda, because it was what Master said. Master said, we're transitioning from this materialistic yuga into this higher yuga. In other words, you know, things are looking better. I thought, just a couple of years, transition's done, golden age, ho, that's what I thought for a really long time. This yuga that we're in is called Dwapara Yuga, and I remember not so long ago, sitting in a class somewhere, and somebody who was knowledgeable on this said, well, you know, there's war all through Dwapara Yuga. We're talking 2,400 years. I mean, this is not your lifespan or mine. 2,400 years of Dwapara, these are very long planetary cycles. I won't give the whole class now. There's a very good book in the bookstore. Go get it. It's really good. But if there's war, that means that people's consciousness is still extremely gross. I mean, your consciousness has to be, you know, stunningly gross in the sense compared to infinity to go to war. And if we're still living on a planet where people go to war, it's not such a good place. In fact, let's just make it worse. They said, because technology is so advanced, you can wage war in a far worse way than when you were riding horses and trapped in armor and you could just kind of, you know, lumber up to each other and whack a little bit. You know, now somebody somewhere can just, well, we know what they can do. This is a very insecure age. Extremely insecure. But simultaneously, which is exactly what we're looking at now, It's like the darkness rises and the light is rising. Just like this, you know? Completely, it's just all going up. But it's just more and more extreme. You know, each side of it is getting more extreme, and that's what we're living in. But so Swami said, don't think that you're responsible for the planet. He said, you didn't create it. You didn't create the destiny of the souls here. Every single individual soul, this is so fascinating to me in a just sort of an abstract way. Every one of you is as real to yourself as I am to me. And in fact, in some odd way, you're probably more real to yourself than you are to me. Because you live within yourself, and everything that you do seems perfectly reasonable to you, doesn't it? Swamiji, once we were at Disneyland, and he just looked out. He went into a very elevated, exalted bhav just in the middle of Disneyland. And he looked out at all these hundreds of people, and he said, you know, thinking of Master's consciousness, he said, imagine not merely loving all these people, which was, you know, a stretch in itself. He said, imagine being every one of these people. So that the consciousness, the reality, the karma, the hopes, the dreams, the disappointments of every single person are as vivid to you as your own. It's a state of consciousness that we literally can't imagine. But it is where who we are and where we're going, which caused Betsy Ten Boom to say to Corey Ten Boom, we must pray for them. And Corey assumed she meant all the people in the camp. And Betsy said, no, the guards, the ones who are inflicting this on us, they're the ones who really need the prayers. Because their hopes and dreams, their heartaches, their suffering was as real to Betsy as her own. I mean, this is where we're going. And even if we don't want to, we will never be content until we reach that point. And we have to practice. Now we don't practice in the same way as we, and I'll say we, did when we were in those monasteries, doing all those things that we did in those monasteries. It's just not the time or place for that anymore. It's not our destiny, it's not our path. But we have to do something. And the Swami was talking about, I was saying about these cataclysms always being part of the story. Swami was saying, even though we are trying to absorb, and we're really trying to absorb it now, a certain responsibility for being dynamic instruments of the power of Dharma, of righteousness, of love, of harmony, of peace. He said, don't make the mistake of thinking you're responsible for the fate of the planet. And that's, again, what he said. You didn't create the planet. You didn't create these souls. You didn't create their destinies. He said, it's presumptuous of you to think that, well, now I'm going to just redirect this. We have no idea what's going on here, do we? We really don't. We have no idea. There's a very touching story that is in, I believe it's in The Path, where Master went with some of the disciples to a concert, and there was a little girl sitting a few rows in front of him who kept turning back and looking at them, and one of the nuns was completely entranced by this child. And afterwards, Master said, you were very attracted to that girl, weren't you? And the nun said, yes, sir, I just couldn't take my eyes off of her, Master, because he was as much in everyone as he was in himself, he said. She died in a concentration camp, he said, but it made her a saint. Now, if you could die in a concentration camp and that would be your route to eternal freedom, would you take it? Would you want someone to prevent it from happening? You see how complicated it gets? And see how difficult it would be for us just to say, this is how the world should be? However, simultaneously, Swamiji said, we have a tremendous responsibility because a great deal of what Swami did was driven by Master's predictions that great hardships were coming to this country. Yes, now 50, 60 years have passed You know, a whole generation has been born and died away almost. And we're still living here, essentially as normal. But increasingly, parts of the world that used to be living as normal are not. And thousands, tens of thousands of people are shifting all over. And there's been some horrid things. But at least we here are still living more or less as we've always lived. But a great deal of what Swami did was motivated by you need to be deep in God. Because if you're not stable in God, your circumstances are going to destabilize you in ways you can't even imagine. Not a pleasant thing to think about, but it was always there. But so Swami was always trying to move us to take responsibility for the world or for something related to the world. But he said it so simply. He said, you're not responsible for the fate of those, but you are responsible for what you are able to channel. And your responsibility in this is very simple. The channel is blessed by that which flows through it. And the more deeply and profoundly we can stand in that place of light, and the more powerfully we can give out that light. I mean, this is a war of light and darkness. It's not really, it may be a war of bombs, and certainly a war of politics, it's certainly a war of greed and ambition. But who are we praying for? Is anybody else's reality as real to us as our own? Are we motivated for the sake of others to rise to a higher level than we can if I'm the only one involved? You know, are we willing to do penance for the souls in purgatory? You know, and on a certain level, regardless of the theology, forget the theology. Just look at what it does for the individual soul. You see, whether there ever is a purgatory or there are any souls in it, it can make you a saint. And what makes you a saint is not what you say you believe. It's your capacity to love. And your capacity to love, not just, oh, I love you, I love you, I love you. Your capacity to love is how much are you able and willing to give. You see, that's where parenthood becomes a path to sainthood for many people. And that's why God either compels you by desire or tricks you by lust and gives you babies. You know, lots of babies. Master said that if a soul wants to be born and sees parents that he thinks will work for them, for himself, he will, this is what Master said, project lustful thoughts into the room. You know, as a little child, I assumed all of us were born on purpose. Only when I was older did I realize how many, the phrase I heard recently was, happy surprises there have been, you know? But the reason all of that happens is because when we discover how much we can give, we suddenly discover who we really are and what we're really capable of. And that's what gives us power. That's our strength. Our strength is to understand, no matter what, the love of God is deeper still. How far can we go? Well, Master said evolution goes on until we attain endlessness. Therefore, how much can we give? Until, as Christine was reading for us today, how can there be humility when there is no sense of self? It isn't merely that I am generous. There's no I. There's no point where that individuality can rest, because the wave has become the ocean. And then those who are still little waves are trying to paste upon the wave, is that humorous exchange between Master and his disciple. But there's no self on which to paste it. Our hearts are restless, St. Augustine said, I believe it was him. We were made for thee alone, and our hearts are restless until we find our rest in thee. That's where we must go. Quickly or slowly, we have the free will to decide. But inevitably, we are God's own, and we will come to that. God bless you.